Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
All right, Cam, we had an unusual edition of Monday Night Raw. I'm going to start with a very simple question. Thumbs up or thumbs down from you?
Thumbs up. Definitely thumbs up.
Yes, me too. I'm going to remember this Raw forever. I mean, this was so different than what we have come to expect. And I won't say loathe, because I think that's overstating it by quite a bit. But I don't loathe the typical Raw format, but I loathe that they stick to it so closely, so often. And this felt so fresh and different. And it wasn't just having a match go more than 100 minutes. And for people who didn't watch Raw and didn't read about it, they're like, what? Did he just say that? Yes. They had a gauntlet match. So it was multiple matches built into one, but some remarkable stretches during it. It wasn't just that, but it was the innovation of having inset interviews, split-screen interviews with Renee, with wrestlers after they got eliminated from it that I loved. And it wasn't just that, but those promos felt less scripted, less corporate, more sports-like. There was just we'll get into details, but there was a lot to like about this. What did you like the most in terms of the change-up in format and the presentation of the gauntlet match?
Someone asked on Twitter, is this the best gauntlet match ever in WWE? And my immediate response was, name another gauntlet match that you remember. Typically they're happenstance. They don't count for a whole lot. You know, what I appreciated about this was right now you're telling me these are the six probably of the seven most important people on your roster. How do we showcase these guys and make them stand out amongst everybody else when we just typically fit them into segments on the show? So, you know, what I liked most was that if these are our important guys, here's how we showcase them against one another. And it wasn't all kick out of 12 finishers and somehow somebody gets the win. It was competition. It was, what can I do to beat this guy in the immediacy of the moment? You know, I just appreciated that they gave these guys a platform to show what makes them special in a different way than they typically do week after week. It was just being in a different format, you know, allowing them to still be themselves and just show what they do a different way. I thought it was really well done.
Yeah, I agree. And I thought Seth Rollins had I hesitate to use the term star-making performance because he's already a star, but a star-boosting performance, a star-redefining performance. This felt like they were trying to say something about Seth to the fan base, to the viewership, that hasn't been said about him in a while. And, you know, when something goes wrong, like a Jason Jordan injury, or before that, a Dean Ambrose injury, cutting the Shield reunion short and changing plans, they got to do something different with Seth. He's too valuable. I thought this match, in the way that he was featured, was a way to tell fans, this guy's got a chance to win the Elimination Chamber on Sunday. If you're not going to be so smart that you're going to either know the finish ahead of time or, you know, figure you can eliminate it down to one or maybe two guys, well, we're going to do everything we can to add at least a third guy to the mix of who you think can win on Sunday. So I thought it was a message as far as Seth goes. We'll talk about his performance specifically, Cam.
I don't know how much Jay-Z you listen to, Wade. We haven't had that conversation.
Yes.
But, one of my favorite Jay-Z songs starts with, allow me to reintroduce myself. I think, you know, post the WrestleMania match with Triple H, you know, Seth Rollins, he has the feud with Samoa Joe and, you know, does a few things. Another thing with Jason Jordan, but it's all been kind of hit or miss. Like, to me, that was supposed to be his jumping off point. It never really happened. You know, they talk about looking for the top guy, looking for the next big guy. But they don't always talk about, you know, who's the next Undertaker, who's the next Triple H. But people have been pushing for Seth Rollins to be the next Shawn Michaels. Like, that's what they see in him. They give him that nickname CrossFit Jesus because he can go. He can just perform. And I think that you know, for them to come out and say after the Jason Jordan injury, to have Rollins come out and say, I want to be that guy, this is exactly what they needed. Him in a long-form match showcasing all the different things he can do, the fact that he can have that endurance to have a match for over an hour, plus, you know, go power move for power move with a guy like Cena after he's gone, you know, hold for hold with Reigns, is just really a compliment to him. And that's exactly what he does, what he has that other guys don't. He just has the ability to stay interesting in a match for, you know, tonight for over an hour. So I thought, like you said, it was a great way to show that this guy has a shot at winning the chamber. And even if that's not the case, you still want to see him in something long form because you know he can do it. You know, I thought, like you said, the inset promos that they had, to me, his promo and Cena's promos really stood out. But for his specifically, just saying that, you know, I know what I went out there and did was impressive, but if I don't win, it just means less. Like, they really made this match coming up in Elimination Chamber count for so much. And we also get, there's just that great performance out of him. Like, this is really him showing again why he deserves to have all the praises heaped on him, because he just has a gear that most guys don't.
Absolutely. Let's set the table here. I am Wade Keller. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. And we appreciate you joining us, listening live or streaming the show or downloading the show after the fact. It is Monday, February 19th, 2018, as we record here our live stream following Raw. You can find the live stream if you want to listen live to the caller portion of the program on Monday nights after Raw and Tuesday nights after SmackDown. We try to get on the air within 10 minutes of the show ending and sometimes as quickly as 2 minutes today. A little later than we hoped with a technical problem where we had to reset a couple things. But be sure to join us, and you can find the stream easily by going to wadekellerpodcast.com and stream the show live. You can also call us right after Raw and SmackDown ends. We've got people on hold right now. We'll be getting to in just a moment. 985 and 516 are the first two on deck. Our phone number, if you want to reach us, is 347-215-8558. Write it down. Email it to yourself or just look at it on wadekellerpodcast.com when you stream. 347-215-8558 is the number to call, and push 1 on your touchtone phone after calling in if you want to do more than just stand by. If you actually want to participate in the show, you have to push 1 to get into that caller queue. All right, I am joined, when I say we, by my co-host, Cameron Hawkins from the PW Torch East Coast cast. Cam, welcome back to the show. Good to have you.
It's great to be here. I really appreciate it.
Excellent. Well, this is a fun show to talk about. I got a lot more I want to talk about. We've got an on-site correspondent, senior PW Torch VIP member Brian Elston, waiting for us in Phoenix, and we'll talk to him in the next segment. And then we've got emails coming in. If we don't get to your call, or you're catching the for some reason you can't call into the show, and by the time we're done with our caller session here, you can email your topic to wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. We got a healthy number of emails already waiting for us for the third and final segment of today's program. Let's go to a call or two, and then we'll continue our conversation about some of the talking points from the show. There's, you know, three major talking points. Well, three or four major talking points on the show, but one looms larger than the rest, and that is the Seth Rollins performance specifically, but in broader sense, the gauntlet match. But we'll talk about the women and the tag team upset and Asuka's promo and, heck, Jeff Jarrett getting into the WWE Hall of Fame. And there's probably one or two other smaller things that I'm not mentioning. So a lot to get to on the show. But let's begin with area code 985. You are up first. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, guys. It's Cody from Baton Rouge. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for calling, Cody. What have you got for us?
Doing well, Cody.
I thought it was a pretty decent show. I tried to watch as much as I could, but I was dealing with some plumbing troubles. But from what I saw, I thought it was really cool. I thought it was really cool that they started out with the gauntlet match, that it lasted as long as it did. And like you said, I thought Seth Rollins put in a really good performance. It made him a lot more believable. I want to ask you guys a couple of things. The first thing I want to ask you guys about is, with the women's division with Ronda Rousey, because they're, throughout the show, they've been, making a big deal about Ronda Rousey coming to Elimination Chamber to sign her WWE contract. And I was wondering what you guys thought about this, because with all the hype that they brought around Ronda Rousey signing to Raw, it would not surprise me at all if WWE pulled a swerve and got her, and then, you know, got Ronda to sign with SmackDown instead. And the reason why, you know, I thought of this is because, you know, I'm just imagining the scene in my head right now. I mean, you got Hunter and Stephanie in the ring, all, you know, all happy and clapping that they got Ronda Rousey. Kurt Angle's in the ring, all clapping and happy as well. You know, Ronda comes to the ring, and then she just, you know, looks in their face and tells it, screw it, I'm signing with SmackDown. And, you know, it gives her that, you know, match with Charlotte that that was kind of teased earlier in the year at the Mae Young Classic. And then it also, you know, in a way, it also kind of sets up something between Hunter and Stephanie and Kurt later on down the road, possibly at WrestleMania. So I'm wondering what you guys think if you know, there's a chance that WWE pulls that kind of swerve.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about that. That's interesting. Today on tonight on Raw, they aired a Ronda Rousey video showing her arrival at the Royal Rumble and then training intensely, boxing and practicing wrestling moves in a wrestling ring, running the ropes, hitting suplexes. That to me is newsworthy. I mean, they're showing, it's not a Ronda Rousey match per se, it's a training session, but they're showing that she is a professional wrestler now, not just someone practicing MMA coming in to just do a quick punch and a submission. And I think that was a good message to send to Raw viewers. She is training to be a WWE superstar, not a guest celebrity. I thought that was important to do and good to do. And they also had Charlotte commenting on her, which plays a little bit into what Cody's saying here, with Charlotte discussing, I wouldn't say narrating the video, but certainly sound bites of her talking about Ronda Rousey and what makes her special and famous. So, Cam, what about that? We've kind of wondered, how do they make Ronda Rousey on the Raw roster work when it seems like the, a lot of different directions they can go in, and they can make some things work on Raw if they do something with Stephanie. But what about the idea of a swerve and Shane McMahon one-ups Stephanie, blindsides, or however you want to look at it, and signs Ronda to SmackDown?
I mean, if you're somebody who views both shows every week, that would be kind of a cool payoff, because it does seem like Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon are so concerned with, you know, the fairness of SmackDown and their top 10 lists and, you know, being fair versus granting opportunities. So for them to be plotting that all along would be a really cool swerve. You know, one thing I did notice tonight, at the beginning of the Asuka Nia Jax segment, they said that if Nia Jax wins, she's added to the Raw Women's Championship match at WrestleMania. Then at the end of the segment, they turned around and say, if Nia Jax wins, she's added to the match of Asuka's choosing.
Ooh.
So they seem to be kind of double talking, you know, what the plans are, but for them to double talk it, you know, a few times over the last few weeks, it seems to be on purpose. So I can definitely see that happening, especially if, you know, you want to bolster a SmackDown rating post-WrestleMania and leading to WrestleMania. I think, you know, adding a Ronda Rousey helps, especially when you have an Asuka on Raw, you know, is being pushed as this undefeated star. You're back in, it seems like, the business of Sasha Banks kind of being the workhorse in the division. So, I mean, to me, the best money-making matchup right now in the women's division is Ronda Rousey and Charlotte. And there's that idea of, will she be ready? But I think it's more important, you know, to have top matches at WrestleMania than for her to be ready. So I could definitely see that. And again, because it seems like Shane and Daniel Bryan are so fixated on each other on SmackDown, like for them to make this happen kind of behind everybody's back would be really cool. And a play on one of the coolest things to ever happen during the Monday Night Wars, the very end of it, when Shane buys WCW.
Yeah. So it's fun to play that out a little bit, because, I mean, I get that the idea is, you know, Stephanie being opposite of Ronda Rousey in some sort of a match helps Stephanie get more famous, and it puts a McMahon against Rousey, and that sort of sends a message that, you know, Rousey's a big enough star that she's in a match with the McMahons right away. But I think Charlotte is your year-round wrestler. She's the one who's going to be at all the house shows, and she's going to be on the 12 pay-per-views, and she's got this upside that they're still not fully tapping into. And if you it sends a message to WWE viewers, fans, and the media, for that matter, that Charlotte is as big of a deal as a Braun Strowman or a Roman Reigns or whomever, or John Cena. I mean, if she is the chosen one to be the first WrestleMania match for Ronda Rousey. And so, yeah, then you have the Shane-Stephanie dynamic play into it. And then you could do Rousey and Stephanie in some other format later when appropriate. And now that all WWE pay-per-views are dual brand, it becomes a little less important that if Rousey ends up a SmackDown wrestler, she can still cross paths with Stephanie more easily with the new format of pay-per-views just announced a few days ago. So it's an intriguing scenario. Cody, do you want to add anything to what Cam and I had to say?
Yeah, you guys make some really good points, and I just want to add that it also there's also the Raw side of things to think about, because every now and then they would tease tension between Stephanie and Kurt, and I think the swerve would be a kind of a good way to move things along with their storyline. Because I mean, imagine if Shane and Brian get their hands on Ronda Rousey, it's a perfect excuse for Stephanie and Triple H to like turn around and blame Kurt for it, which could lead to like an angle. And, it could possibly involve Jason Jordan and all that stuff.
Yeah, there are a lot of ways this could go. You've got me intrigued, Cody, so we'll tune in Sunday and see what happens. Just a reminder that our sister show, the PW Torch Livecast, is available at pwtorchlivecast.com, or just search PW Torch in Apple Podcasts or whatever app you use on Android or iPhone, and you can download and subscribe, or you can subscribe to and then download the 7-day a week PW Torch Livecast shows with my colleagues here at PW Torch. That includes Sunday night after Elimination Chamber, PW Torch columnist Greg Parks hosting the post pay-per-view show, taking your calls. There are tons of calls, tons of conversation every Sunday after WWE pay-per-views, and that will be streaming live just as this is right now on Sunday night. So go to pwtorchlivecast.com for that program if you want to stream it live after the chamber, and that'll also give you the phone number to call if you want to participate. We're here at WadeKellerPodcast.com, and we took our first call. Let's go ahead and take a second call here and go to area code 516. As promised, you're up number two. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, Wade. Hey, Cameron. It's Frank from Farmingdale. How you guys doing tonight?
Doing great. Thanks for calling again, Frank. What have you got for us?
Hey, absolutely. No problem. Forgive the voice. I think I'm coming down with something, so hopefully I'm coming through all right. But anyway, I enjoyed Raw tonight. I did. I wasn't sure, what to expect from the gauntlet match and all of that, but it certainly had a great showing. My question to you guys, pertaining to Seth Rollins, you guys talked about the showing that he had, and it was amazing and whatnot. What is his path to WrestleMania? I mean, with Jason Jordan, I assume, out of the picture, mm-hmm. and Ambrose out of the picture, is there any way maybe he gets a spot wedged into this, Reigns-Lesnar situation? You certainly have the story from 3 years ago, when Seth, cashed in the briefcase and all of that. So you could certainly, tie it into that. Is there any way they could cherry pick Rollins into this? And, I hate to see a triple threat match, but, in this particular case, it might work. What do you guys think about that?
No, it is interesting that we had Roman Reigns bring that up on his opening promo on the show, Cam, talking about how he can beat Brock Lesnar. He's the only one who can beat Brock Lesnar. And if it weren't for Seth Rollins, he would have done that at WrestleMania. What do you think of that, Cam? I just want to see one-on-one matches. I mean, that's my default. Mm-hmm. There has to be a really, really compelling special reason to at a WrestleMania, really any pay-per-view, to add more than one. You can do two-on-two and three-on-three, but to do a three-way or a four-way, that just seems like a crutch. It seems like a booking tick that WWE goes to too often. And if you don't have a good one-on-one match, unless it's the result of an injury or something unexpected, it's something that you've done wrong. You know, because in pro wrestling, one-on-one matchups are the biggest money matchups historically. So just do it right and do one-on-one. But maybe is this one of those circumstances where with Seth's performance, the split reaction to Roman Reigns, and it will be, you know, that's a generous way to put how the WrestleMania crowd will probably receive him. And then you got Lesnar, who's kind of a tweener. He's in between a heel and a face. He's just sort of on his own island. You add a pure baby face now in Seth to that mix. Is that a crowd-pleasing alternative? And with Jordan being injured and nothing else obvious for Seth, is that a good audible to call, Cam?
Well, if you've ever listened to me on this show at all, you know I do. I attend the church of Bruce Mitchell. And so I am of the belief that, you know, when you have three guys in a match, you're splitting the heat three ways. You know, one-on-one is what I think you want. You know, myself, Travis, a few of our other buddies were in the building at WrestleMania 30 for the Daniel Bryan, Randy Orton, Batista match. The biggest difference there is everybody's on Daniel Bryan's side, and they understood that was going to be the situation. I don't think if you're in the business of making Roman Reigns the guy, you put a Seth Rollins in that match because that's where the cheers are going to go. As much as I talked about how great he was tonight and everything that he can be, I think he's exactly who you keep out of a Roman Reigns main event in front of a WrestleMania crowd, because it's really defeating the project that you've been working on. You know, if the Ronda Rousey thing ends up being a mixed tag, that's a great spot for Seth Rollins. If you do have an interpromotional match and Randy Orton's not on his U.S. title path, there maybe you have a match. It definitely could happen, but I just don't think you do anything to, you know, adjust that one-on-one match that you're going to want to have between a Brock Lesnar and a Seth Rollins, especially if you're to believe this is Brock's last match in WWE for the foreseeable future. I just think that regardless of how well Seth Rollins is performing, you do everything you can to keep that match one-on-one and hopefully find something else for him to do at WrestleMania.
Now, if they had Stephanie and Hunter against Rousey and a mystery partner in mind, or not a mystery partner, a partner in mind, it's a mystery to us or the fan base, they had to have somebody in mind who was going to be that man opposite of Hunter, you know, for the mixed match situation. So Seth presumably was headed towards a match with Jason Jordan. That makes me think Seth wasn't the A plan to be the person to team with Rousey. But given the alternatives, the likely people who would have teamed with Ronda Rousey, it seems like Kurt Angle gets talked about, Braun Strowman, certainly that'd be a big-time match for Braun. Braun and Ronda Rousey together, could be a lot of fun. So those would seem to be the options. Is Seth important enough, and because of the history with Seth and Hunter and Steph, there's certainly a backstory there. And if they are high on Seth Rollins right now and maybe a little down on Roman for some various reasons, maybe this is a way to test. Maybe tonight was the beginning of trying to get Seth up to the top level, and not just the top guy, but a top guy again. The guy that maybe you build around, that you put on the billboard, that you plan SummerSlam and WrestleMania around. If they're going that way, and tonight certainly could be interpreted that way, do you bump Angle or Braun or whomever and put Seth in that spot? It's not a crazy match with the history between Hunter and Steph and Seth. Cam, what do you think of that?
I still think if you have a choice, you go with Braun, because it'll just do more for him having those, you know, having that video on ESPN of him and Ronda, you know, tossing Stephanie and Hunter around. You know, I just think that even though that's a big match for who Seth is, like, he's not your crossover guy. He's your workhorse guy. You know, I would say, again, whoever you have on the other brand that's the biggest star who's not doing a thing, I think that's who you have Seth wrestle if you can tell that story. Like, you probably have a Balor and Miz match up some type of way. There's still nothing for Elias to do, but I don't know if you have the time to build up a one-on-one match. And personally, I think they look too much alike to have a feud together. But yeah, I still think that you go with Braun in that spot, and just whoever can put on the best match that people want to see is who you have Rollins go against, not necessarily the best story. And it's just a fit for this year because that's how things are. And then you can ride him out in the summer. Maybe he makes a move to SmackDown where he can be more visible. But I still think in that match specifically, Braun's the start. I'm the biggest Kurt Angle fan in the world. Never want to see him wrestle again because I'm afraid of what's going to happen. But Seth would still be my option after Braun.
Yeah. No, you make a good case. And that's my leaning. Braun number one because of the, you know, it, I don't think it applies that much literally, but this so-called Sports Center moment. And it's more than that now. You know, it's the mainstream media moment, the photos. And Braun is a guy who grabs people's attention. I don't know how important that is. I mean, I speaking of Jeff Jarrett, he used to chase those Sports Center moments in TNA, and it made no difference. You know, he'd get on Sports Center, made no difference. It's like that TNA was doing bigger ratings than Sports Center, and people were... You know, when TNA were like, oh, my God, we're on ESPN SportsCenter. It's like, it's not that big of a deal. You know, what you need to do is satisfy your core audience and get them invested in the product. So I don't know that WWE should be booking WrestleMania around wanting those moments, even though they do kind of mark out for mainstream attention and acceptance. I think they should kind of get past that at this point, unless it's something transcendent like Ronda Rousey or, you know, Brock Lesnar announcing that he's signing with WWE and or UFC, you know, that kind of thing. But to just book WrestleMania around some photos that are so fleeting that people who don't like WWE will notice and then move on in their lives, you don't want to do that. But to the fans who see the collage of clips and photos of Braun on SportsCenter, on talk shows, photographed under major media banners, that can, to your audience, make him seem like a bigger star. Now, again, he doesn't need that. People want to pay to see him anyway, but WWE is going to aim to do that with their top acts. And so it is part of the formula, and I do agree with your initial statement. Braun has more to gain from that than Seth. Seth's more of a top glue guy. Braun more of that, you know, transcendent crossover central star, which it's just amazing to say that still, even after saying it for the better part of a year now, that he seems headed in that direction. So it is intriguing. It's an important spot if that's the direction they go with Ronda, who is teaming with her. And they've got some decent candidates, some good candidates, and a decent number of candidates. So, yeah, I'm interested. What do you think of Jarrett going on the Hall of Fame, Cam? Seem like a good second or third guy in a class to go in?
Yeah, one of our weekly polls was, you know, Jeff Jarrett's going in the Hall of Fame. What do you think is his biggest contribution? Because, you know, I said, I listen to you and Bruce a lot talk about this. And, you know, Bruce, you know, votes on the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame. And my basis for a Hall of Fame is basically this. If your Hall of Fame isn't decided by a bunch of old white guys who never played your sport, it's not a legit Hall of Fame. So, kind of with the WWE Hall of Fame, you know, it's who Vince likes at the time. And then it's fun to kind of figure out why you think somebody should be there. You know, Jeff Jarrett was a mainstay in the mid-card in the early 90s and then late 90s. He was WCW World Champion and was the top of their card for a while as the second or third or fourth incarnation of WCW. You know, he's responsible for TNA, which was the number two company for a long time. And a lot of the guys that we see in WWE and other places now, that's where they did the majority of their work. So, I mean, everybody's deserving if Vince feels like you're deserving. But in a lot of ways, because of his contribution to wrestling, whether you think it was good, bad, or in between, Jarrett deserves that. Like, I'm anxious for WrestleMania weekend to hopefully be in a crowd of like media and see how they feel about it, because it's it's one of the guys where if you had to put money in, you'd say he'd never be there. But now that he's there, you're like, well, he did do X, Y, and Z. So I think it's appropriate just because he does have a pretty significant contribution and resume.
Yeah. I mean, I think he belongs in as much as there's a tangible, sensible resume for who does and doesn't get in. Jarrett not getting in would be political. Jarrett getting in makes sense based on his contribution. He's not a headliner. I don't think anybody's saying, wow, with Goldberg and the Dudleys, they should have saved him for another year so he could headline. Now, Jeff might think that if he's delusional about what his years booking himself at the top of TNA for many years meant to the larger scheme of things in 2018. He was criticized for pushing himself over AJ Styles and just pushing himself too hard back then in the early years of TNA. So as long as he's got a grip on his place in the larger landscape when he steps back, this is the right spot for him. Headlining is not. But I also don't, as much as headlining is in form, not being in the Hall of Fame is not right either. He belongs based on what he did. The Double J character was iconic. He also has a longtime friend and road dog, Jesse James, Brian James, in management now. He's moved his way up, gained Vince McMahon's trust. And Brian is somebody who I think would be pushing for Jeff to be in the Hall of Fame. And so he's got friends in high places. The WWF resume, WCW Nitro resume, I don't know if I'd call it more impressive because he was sort of the default top champion at a time when everybody was either injured or holding out for contract or pretending to be injured or suspended or whatever it was. But he was a top guy for a while during the Vince Russo book Nitro era with Booker T. And so in that kind of kayfabe landscape, he was a high-level guy in WWF, an even higher-level guy in WCW during the dismal WCW years, and then a significant top act and promoter in TNA. I mean, there's no denying that he belongs in the Hall of Fame when you just look at it objectively compared to other people who have also made it. But I don't think he's the number one guy. He's tied with the Dudleys. Would you say he's kind of tied with the Dudleys in terms of a second-tier guy, but neither? Would you have the Dudleys higher or lower than Jeff in terms of the Hall of Fame hierarchy?
If it was even, I'd have the singles wrestler above the tag team.
Yeah.
And it's about that. But two things. Because Jeff Jarrett went in the Hall of Fame, I watched a 5-minute montage of guitar shots to the head because that was the time that I was like 14 or 15.
Yeah.
So that and him calling people every variation of Slap Nuts was fascinating to me. The other thing that I noticed, like WWE, like even you talked about how him not getting in would be political. WWE is still crazy political and petty, because if you watch the montage, it was all Jeff Jarrett being this great Intercontinental Champion. They spliced in footage of him as WCW World Champion and never said a word about it in that video montage. Like, there's no reason to include it if you're not going to acknowledge it. Mm-hmm. But they made sure visually you saw that he was the WCW World Champion in the video clip and didn't say a word about WCW. So they're always going to get their shots in.
There's no doubt. Now, you can have friends in high places and you are still going to – they're still going to find a way to send you little messages and frame things how they want for their version of history.
And that they did.
Yes.
Yeah. But I'd have him a bit above the Dudleys.
Yes.
But yeah, he never, I never fired him on live TV. So I don't know.
All right. Time always gets away from us on this show, but we got to get to Brian, our on-site correspondent. So we got to also cut to our break. When we come back, we'll have on-site correspondent. We'll talk about what it was like to be in the building tonight. We also have emails coming up. If we didn't get to your call or you're about to get on the phone banks, just drop us an email. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. I'll be by tomorrow night after SmackDown, and then we'll have our Thursday flagship over on the Blue Brand at Podcast One. So if you are not subscribing to both Wade Keller podcast feeds, this is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, the Red Brand, and we have our Blue Brand with the Thursday flagship and Interview Friday, which will feature the third and final installment of my interview with NWA World Heavyweight Champion Nick Aldis this Friday. If you missed the first two installments, they are available right now. Just search Wade Keller in Apple Podcasts and look for the blue logo and the red logo with my face on it. Subscribe to both, and you'll be covered for all four free shows per week. If you're interested in all the podcasts that I host and all of them ad and plug free, that's a new feature for all the Wade Keller podcasts throughout the week, along with all the PW Torch livecasts ad and plug free, along with VIP exclusives such as the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, which I host with senior Torch columnist Bruce Mitchell, which Cam has referenced a couple times, along with The Fix with Todd Martin and many other shows, the East Coast Cast VIP After Show. Among them, please subscribe. Go to pwtorch.com/govip to get information on becoming a VIP member. Get a bunch of shows ad-free and plug-free, including this one, and then a bunch of other VIP-exclusive podcasts. It's a great array of shows. We just added an ROH show. We just added we did a New Japan roundtable following the latest New Japan Live event that streamed on New Japan World. And we have more cool stuff coming up, which you can see the announcements on Twitter. We'll be talking more about it as the week goes on. So go VIP, pwtorch.com/govip. All right, we are back, and we are joined by our on-site correspondent, Brian Alston, who is the senior PW Torch VIP member. Brian, we're joined as by our co-host today, Cameron Hawkins. Cam, Brian.
My man, Brian, you know, how are you?
Cam, I'm not sure. Cameron, I'm not sure if Cameron and I have ever met before, even talked before. But hey, Cameron, how are you?
Brian, I feel like you're absolutely drinking a beer I'd never heard of right now, and you're going to take a picture of it for me.
That might be true. We'll have to see what happens about that. Hey, first of all, I hope you both have a real good night. First of all, let's start off that way too.
I appreciate it. What we want to do is talk to you about your night. Did we just pull you from an after party?
No, I was getting a quick drink before I take Phoenix's light rail back to my car and then eventually drive home. So
that sounds like an after party. We'll call it that.
Okay,
or close to it. Yeah. So let's talk about your experience tonight in the arena attending Raw in person. A very different format to Raw. So I'm it's nice because we can break from our normal routine and talking to an on-site correspondent a little bit, because you got to see a show that was very different in format. We got to experience it on TV, and I loved it. Cam loved it. But I'm curious what it was like in the building to have one really, really long match going over 100 minutes with very little break in between. How did that come across as a in-person experience as a fan?
So a really good question, Wade. And overall, I thought it went well. I'll tell you the part that dragged really was when the Cena was between Cena and Seth, and that maybe the beginning to middle-ish part, because there I tweeted this out to you and Bruce that there were a couple, there were at least two. I'm not sure if yourself or Cam ever heard like, this is boring chant. It was not very loud, but it was somewhat, I'm not sure if it was audible or not, but it was a couple times during, again, maybe the beginning to the middle Cena versus Seth part where there's some, this is boring part. But man, I'm a Roman. I'm not a Roman guy. I'm a Roman okay guy. But he really got a lot of heat during when he first came out. And of course, you know, just like any time, all three of us know that once the crowd kind of just forgets about, hey, we need to boo Roman. But he did get a lot of boos, and there were, of course, kids and a lot of kids there as well. He did get a lot of boos when he first came out, but the crowd kind of warmed up towards him towards the end. That part of the match between Seth and Roman went really well. And then again, once Cena came out, it's funny, there's an 8-year-old kid behind me, and he was really upset that Cena got jumped right away by Seth. But that was the part when it kind of dragged. But once we started getting to more near falls, the crowd started really picking up, and Seth got a really nice ovation, when he finally got eliminated.
Very cool. Cam, do you have a question for Brian?
Yeah, Brian, and we spent a long time talking about kind of his resurgence, kind of where he fits in after being with Jason Jordan, and how, this is just one of those performances that reminds you of just how good he is. Being there in the building, him kind of going for so long, what was the conversation like just with people around, once you kind of hit that, 20, 30 minute mark, or even, after getting a roll up on Roman and then, having that really good match with Cena, just what are people saying as this is happening, especially when he hasn't really been in a singles capacity for so long?
Well, Cam, it's a really good question, because the people that were initially around me, they were all, again, I had a couple kids behind me, and again, an eight and 9-year old behind me with their dad. And the dad wasn't very talkative. I had a guy next to me who was a fan, but he wasn't a huge fan. I had to tell him what the XFL was, which was kind of funny. And then I explained to him also
why Paige wasn't wrestling, because he didn't realize she got hurt again, mm-hmm. or got hurt. So, and then right next to me was a lady with a, looks like she had like a special needs person with her. And, you know, so it wasn't like I had some really good wrestling people to talk to right around me. But, you know, we're like, you know, I say really up for Seth. So it's kind of, you know, I hate to not answer your question, but just my discussion would have been really light with the people who were around me. They weren't like, I'd say our type of fans.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this then, if I can jump on with one more.
Of course,
then.
Yeah.
I think, Brian, it's the first time, because I think the last time we talked, I think you might have been for a SmackDown show. What
yes.
is the energy like a live reaction to Braun Strowman? Like how is the reaction to him versus the reaction to the other guys who were in the match? Like, I feel like he's just kind of energy personified with the crowd. What was that like?
Yeah, he was. And I was, you know, once Elias came out, I kind of called, you know, it's like, hey, I was telling, you know, again, trying to interact with people around me. I was like, hey, you know, Braun's going to be last, obviously. And they're like, well, no, The Miz might still come out. I was like, The Miz might be last. I was like, no, it's going to be Braun. So he, like we've talked about in towards various audios, is that he was playing to the crowd, you know, maybe it's a tad little too much, you know, but I say for our type of fans, maybe it's a little too much, maybe for like, again, the best way to say it, the layperson fan or the normal fans, they were pretty up for it. Because, you know, it was times where he was like, you know, just to me kind of like, I won't say Hulkish kind of way, you know, like begging for things, but it was kind of a little too much, you know, because we were saying like one more time. And of course he did the slam again back to Miz. So, but I mean, his energy was there. I mean, we were like, you know, once we kind of realized that Miz, once we saw Miz came out, we realized he was going to be last. And I was like, hey, I called, and everybody's like, you know, Braun. So I'd say that there's a definite liking of him. It's just, again, with me being, it's almost like he's maybe begging a tad a little too much, maybe a little over.
Mm. As going back to Seth for a moment, as the match went longer, there's in pro wrestling, there's the idea of, oh, if you make your ring entrance twice, there's diminishing returns. And if you wrestle right. twice, there's diminishing returns. With Seth, was it diminishing returns, or did you sense that the fans felt they were watching something special and actually got more into him the longer the match went? It seemed they were a little deflated by the pinfall as opposed to relieved that they got to move on to see somebody else instead of him.
No, I think they were I think actually they were getting more and more into him because, again, you know, you have, like, you know, the two of the most polarizing WWE wrestlers right now being Roman and Cena, the ones you were going against, both being faces and both, you know, again, like I just said, polarizing. So it was, as he won both matches, you know, the crowd were like up and up, and they were really getting a lot of energy. So I think to me it was, I know how we talk about, you know, his turn was what it was, and, you know, him going against Triple H and now him rejoining the Shield. I think to me it was kind of a coming out party. You know, that he is more than, you know, he's been stuck in, I say stuck, he's been tagged for the last couple months, and then just the way how his face turn went. But I think this was a good coming out party for him. And I think the fans really were really receptive to it.
Brian, were you able to see the promos that we saw on television? Because it normally there isn't a match going on when a promo is taking place or an interview. So I was curious how that was played in the building, if at all.
No, and the only reason why, because I was I'm on a particular Facebook group, and I kept hearing them say things like that. So to answer your question, no, we didn't get any of that at all inside the arena.
And did you know when they went to commercial break explicitly, or did you kind of have to guess?
I kind of, you know, after, like, you know, three of us have watched TV enough, you kind of figure out when there are times when they are on commercial, you know, like the where Cole and Coach and Corey are sitting at, it kind of goes a little bit darker, and you can see them kind of do stuff like drinking water and things, and then you can see how the stuff happens in the ring, so we could tell when there was a commercial going on. But, and, you know, and then, like how you say a lot of time, wait, where, you know, people have to stand in the ring for 5 minutes while, you know, things are happening, and yeah. That happened to Sasha. But going back to your original question, we didn't get any of the interviews at all.
Yeah, that's
it. Stuff at all.
Because I thought it was one of the better parts of a good show were the promos. So it doesn't surprise me because I can't think of anything much more impolite in professional wrestling that a promoter could do to wrestlers in the ring and more disrespectful than airing a promo on a big screen while they're in the middle of a match. We understand as TV viewers that happening, you know, you can multitask on TV, but I was hoping that they didn't actually show the promos on the big screen with the volume up or down. That would have been awkward, but it turns out you miss more of the show now than typical for being in the building, because those promos were so good, the backstage interviews. Kemp, go ahead if you got another one for Brian.
I do hate that you missed it, Brian, because that's going to be, I think, one of the most interesting things on the whole show was really John Cena's promo. Let me ask you this. What's the live reaction to Asuka's promo? Felt like sometimes she did have some inflection and she got some cheers. I felt like for the most part it was a bit down. How it came across on TV is, like, we know what she's saying. Sometimes the inflection wasn't what you expected. But what was kind of the live reaction in the building to what she was saying as far as her responses to Renee's questions?
So, overall, I thought it was a positive. She received positively. Now, where I was sitting at, I was facing the hard camera, so the hard camera would have seen me, but I'm not in the very sensitive seat, so I doubt I was ever on TV. So her back was to me the entire time. But then if I looked up, crank my head up, there were some, that's where, like, you know, the arena screens are. So I could look up and see her face. So on my section, the part, unless you look up and saw her face, you just kind of heard what she was saying. And, you know, it was kind of hard to make out exactly what she was saying. So I'm not sure what, at least in my section, about how great it would have been, you know, because to hear her, you know, and I know her English is what it is, but to then see her face and see and hear her would be, you know, a little better impact, I should say.
But
I would think that. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Did it seem like the crowd saw her as a star, and they were forgiving of her broken English, or were they either disinterested or laughing at her or disrespectful of the fact that it was difficult to make out what she was saying and her cadence was not natural?
I didn't hear any disrespect at all. Everything. It was respectful. And by the way, there was a girl behind me to my left who, she might have been maybe, let's say, 7 or 8 years old, had an Asuka shirt on, had an Asuka mask on. And I talked to her for, like, you know, a minute or two talking to her. And I think it was her mom was with her. And I was like, "Oh, you're Asuka. Like, I like the mask. I like your shirt." And she was like, "Thank you." You know, so she was pretty happy. And so then when Asuka came out, you know, everybody stands up, so she could hardly see. So her dad was there too, and he put her on his shoulders. So she was pretty happy about that.
That's great. It really is.
Absolutely. Let me go back just to Reigns and Cena for a minute. I'm always intrigued when they're around each other or against each other or teaming with each other, how the crowd responds to them and how that contrasts. Talk specifically about Reigns versus Cena, as in terms of how the crowd responded to each of them under similar circumstances against Seth.
So my fandom, I stopped doing this. I used to be a total heel fan years ago, and I kind of stopped doing that because I think I made one father mad several years ago when I was cheering for the bad guy. So I stopped doing that. So the reason why I bring that up is because, you know, a lot of time I was yelling, you know, when they first started, Seth and Roman was like, I'm like, they're brothers. They can't be fighting. And I was yelling that out. And but I would say that Cena had overall a better reaction versus Seth rather than Roman did. And I'm not sure if it has something to do, Wade and Cam, with, you know, with Roman being really booed and him coming out first and then having the match. You know, if you flipped it and had Cena come out first and had the same thing, had an interview with Charlie, and, you know, and would he have got his boot as much? But it was, I thought that Cena got a better, at least a better initial reception than Roman did.
And did you think that either of them won over the crowd more through their performance? Because you kind of talked earlier on about, well, the crowd, you know, they think they're supposed to and they don't like Roman, so they boo him, but then they get into the action. What did either wrestler transform the crowd more than the other?
It would have to be Cena. And again, the reason why I don't necessarily like saying that about Cena, because there were, like I mentioned earlier, there were those boring chants and it was very localized. Twice it was very vocalized, but for them to say that, but it was, you know, we went through this pretty decently paced match between Roman and Seth, and you turn around and it really slowed down a lot, you know, because Seth had to sell, which is the part I appreciate a lot. I need some selling. And it slowed down pretty much. And I think that's where they kind of started losing the crowd. But then once they started doing all the near falls and, Seth doing the AA, which everybody popped for. And when Cena lifted his shoulders up, everybody popped for. So I would say that it was Roman overall was better received. But Cena, I think, you know, he wasn't just as booed as much. And I think, you know, it could have been if you flipped them, it could have been just the total opposite where, you know, Cena comes out first and everything like that. Cena might have been booed, would have been not as well received as Roman was.
Cam, do you have another question for Brian?
Just the other thing kind of about that match. Brian, does this – I'll tell you what. We can talk about that match another time. Let me ask you. I'm watching Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville on TV, and you see things closer on TV, and it still looks like they're a little ways away. Some things aren't as crisp. Some moves aren't as smooth. How does it look live? Does it stand out like maybe they still need some polishing? Or because you're seeing it from like a bit of a different perspective, does everything kind of seem to mesh well? It's not quite as detailed as it is on TV. What's kind of your reaction to seeing them live?
Wow, Cam. I'm going to say I received it a little bit better than I've seen them on TV, but I don't know how it sounded on TV, but the crowd was, I'd say, muted almost the rest of the night, really, to be honest. I think that the gauntlet took a lot out of us. And the rest of the matches, while, you know, I'll never poo-poo any match, the rest of the matches weren't that great exciting. So I think our energy level would have been, was down pretty much the rest of the night. I thought those two ladies did well, and I didn't see anything glaring as I was from where my vantage point was. The crowd was, again, polite, but it wasn't, you know, luckily it wasn't with, there was no, you know, cat calls or during the rest of the, I should say this, by the way, during the rest of the entire night, there weren't any cat calls or anything like that. And for any of the other matches, once we got past that one lull with Cena and Seth, there were no other, anything else that would have been, I would have considered to be negative, at least in my section where I can really hear.
Talk about the overall attendance in the building.
Okay. So last time I mentioned Wade, when I was your on-site correspondent, when the last time they came to Phoenix, it was a SmackDown taping. And it was on right now we're in downtown Phoenix is where the arena was. Last time was out on the west side of Phoenix where I live at. And I was mentioning about how it takes a crowd a while to get there because just the way Phoenix area is. Here, I would say that if it was at least the available seats, I would say 90% full where the hard camera is normally stationed at. Of course, they have some seats that were around the hard camera that they didn't sell. But unlike last time when they were in Glendale, it wasn't like the whole section where the hard camera was at that they just tarped that all off. There was, you know, definite seats that they tarped off around the hard camera, but around there, you know, let's say maybe five or six seats around the hard camera. They sold those. The upper level, facing the hard camera where I was sitting at, or facing towards the hard, it would have been seen by the hard camera. That level was pretty full. But of course, around behind the hard camera and on the sides, those were all tarped off. I would say, you know, for available seats, maybe 90% full. Unfortunately, Wade, you know, I know you're going to, of course, ask this question. I'm just not a good mathematician when it comes to things like that. But I would say the attendance was really good. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens tomorrow for SmackDown. You know, the guy was sitting behind me with his 8-year-old kid. He bought the kid, by the way, AJ gloves, and he bought him a Money in the Bank briefcase. And he was wearing Cena gear. He came in with Cena gear. He was saying they're going to be there tomorrow in the exact same seats. I decided to buy my seats a little bit different, so I'm on the other side from where I'm sitting at, a little bit closer, so I can have like a little bit different look.
Yeah. Well, were there any matches either before Raw that you know about, if you got there in time, or after Raw went off the air?
Yeah, I wasn't sure if I was going to get there on time, but actually I did. The timing was really weird. So we had a cruiserweight match, Grand Metal League beat Tony Nese, and then both of these were for main event, and we had the Revival beat Slater and Rhino. The you said something earlier, and I was going to jump in and want to say it about, but let's just say not necessarily false advertising. Let's say false advertising. So they did advertise a 6-man match, and I have it written down here on my phone, but for the dark matches, they are the ending match. But the ending match was just Bray versus Matt. I'd say maybe 85% of the crowd still stayed behind to watch the match. There's a guy right before the card started that he was passing out delete signs in our area. So the majority of us had delete signs, and the people stayed around. Again, it was not a lot of people left because almost like right after Raw went off the air, it pretty much, Bray's music hit. And, so everybody turned their fireflies on. And then Matt came out. So it was almost immediate. It wasn't like a long way we had to wait for that match to start.
Was a person handing out signs officially with WWE or just a fan?
You know, to me, I'd say 51% he was with WWE because he looked like a normal guy and he had like a normal shirt on, but he was like, hey, I printed all these things out. I'm just going to hand them out in this area, so please take one. So he didn't seem like an official guy, but, you know, I don't put it behind, you know, WWE to have a guy hand out those signs.
Gotcha. So you were going to say what the official or the advertised main event was that didn't happen?
Oh, yeah. It was a six-man match, and it changed because actually Samoa Joe was originally on it, and then they pulled him off of it. So it would have been The Bar and The Miz versus Cena, Roman, and I believe it was Seth. Let me see. Okay, I'm sorry about that. I had to look it up, and it is right here. It was Raw, Cena, and Strowman versus Miz and The Bar. It originally was supposed to have been Miz, Kane, and Samoa Joe was the original one, but then they changed it to Miz and The Bar. So that was the advertised main event that they talked about on TV.
And it was going to be...
And what we got was... I'm sorry, go ahead.
It was going to be Joe and Miz and who originally?
Joe, Miz, and Kane.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Yep. All right. Yep, that makes sense. All right, cool. Who won the dark match, just to be official here?
Matt won it.
Okay.
And won it with a side effect. So, hey, also my ticket prices.
Yes.
So, I know you're going to ask about it. So the part I'm kind of mad about is that, like I mentioned about how I'm switching seats, tomorrow night for SmackDown. So I bought them the same time, but I bought them separately. And maybe I messed up how I bought stuff on Ticketmaster, but both tickets cost $70 face value. But I bought the Raw one first, and then they tacked on X amount of dollars, so it ended up being $93.
Ah.
So then when I went to go buy I wanted to buy the SmackDown ones like right next, but then they tacked on the same amount. So it's I ended up paying $93 for both tickets, so 93 times two for both tickets. And I'm not sure how I messed it up because I only had to pay it the service charge once, right? You would think anyway.
Yeah.
That's how much it would.
Let that be a lesson, everybody. Yeah.
Brian, did you say that Matt won the match with a side effect?
No. Okay, Cam, let me say a side effect. Don't quote me on that.
Okay.
Let's say he won the match. Okay.
I was like, for the first time since Matt Hardy V1 on SmackDown, he won a match with a side effect. I was excited. I was going to try to find the tape on that, but okay.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for doing the course correction. I appreciate that.
Oh, that's fun.
All good. I wanted to see it.
All right, Brian, we got to roll. Any other final observation that you want to pass along from being in the building tonight?
Actually, I'm going to talk about two things really briefly, but nothing about the arena. First of all, if you can hear my voice right now, Wade mentioned I'm 20. I just turned 27-year Pro Wrestling Torch VIP subscriber. It was February the 7th when I turned 27 years. I do not regret it. I will never regret it. It's a fantastic thing to do. So if you can hear my voice, please at least look into it, and I guarantee you will enjoy it. Also, the second thing I want to talk about, Wade and Cam, is that I'm a somewhat of a contributor to the Pro Wrestling Torch Deep Dive with Rich Fan. He has a show every Saturday at 6 o'clock Eastern. And it's we're a deep dive where he deep dives into a particular topic, and it's a really good show. And hopefully some of the Torch listeners can start, you know, of course it's on, you can get it on demand, but it's live on Saturdays. And he takes calls, I should say. I've done one show. I'm going to do another show here soon. And it's a great, addition to the Torch family. So if you want to, please listen to that as well. That's actually all I have, Kevin Wade, unless you have something for me at all.
That's it for me. Brian, thank you so much. We're going to talk to you again tomorrow night, so it'll be interesting to compare notes again.
I'll be looking forward to talking to you, Wade. And Cam, have a great night. And Cam is one of my heroes, and I always appreciate talking to you, Cam.
Hey, Brian, the feeling's mutual, man. Thank you so much.
Have a real good night, gentlemen. Thanks a lot again. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian. If you want to be an on-site correspondent, email us, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. In the subject line, put the date and the city that you are planning to attend, and I may be in touch with you, and we may line something up to get you on the show to do what Brian just did and share with all of our listeners across the globe what it was like to be in the building for Raw or SmackDown. If you're going to a pay-per-view, we don't do post-pay-per-view shows here on the Wade Keller Podcast, but Greg Parks does for the post-pay-per-view show, so we can hook you up with him for the Sunday night PW Torch livecasts, which, yes, includes the deep dive with Rich Fan. Cam, please take a moment to plug your involvement in the East Coast cast and how people can hear more of you.
All right. So, yeah, every Wednesday evening, 6:30 Eastern, 5:30 Central, Travis Bryant hosts and I co-host the PW Torch East Coast cast, where we cover the week in wrestling as well as the goings-on in entertainment, film, music, sports, whatever it is you want to talk about. Typically, we cover that from an hour and a half to 3 hours every Wednesday evening. Take live callers, anywhere from 5 to 50, depending on the week. So Travis Bryant hosts that. I co-host that. We recently did start streaming the show live on Facebook every week. And so if it's not both Travis and myself, I'll be on there. I'll be covering the Blog Talk Radio chat room as well as the Facebook fan page chat. Love to get on and talk wrestling with you guys. Always a fun time.
Excellent. We will be back after this break with the email segment and try to fit in some other topics I jotted down here as the show has been progressing that we have not gotten into yet. So stay tuned for all that. All right, we're back to take some emails and hit on some topics that we have yet to cover. Cam, a few other things that we haven't talked about. What's at the forefront of your mind that you want to bring up so we for sure have time for that? And then we'll start in on the emails here.
Definitely the John Cena promo.
Yeah.
I thought that was the standout moment of the show.
And why? What stood out?
Because, the desire for John Cena to be a three-dimensional character is what I think people really want. I don't think people are actually worried about face turns and heel turns. They just want to feel like the character is more authentic. And I don't know if I've seen John Cena do anything more authentic on screen in WWE than what he did tonight. For him to question his ability to complete matches and win matches because of how many hats he's wearing, I just thought was, as genuine as you can be in a scripted format. He doesn't seem to be completely sure of himself. And it's not about his actual ability. It's just about the strain of having to be so many different things in so many different fields. It does kind of also give me that feel that maybe we're looking at a John Cena Undertaker match.
Yes.
Because for years and years, they called the Undertaker the conscience of WWE. What's more of an attack of conscience than to say, do I belong here or not? And a lot of time he's the barometer for that, whether it's does a full-time wrestler belong, whether it's guy who's not a champion but is also a mainstay belong, or in Roman Reigns' case, whether it's the person who quote-unquote shuts the book on the legend. Like, The Undertaker served so many purposes at WrestleMania. Is it his job to reaffirm John Cena's standing as a main guy? Is it his job to send John Cena to put him out to pasture? Like, I just thought the uncertainty that you never see from John Cena was really good. And he just, for whatever you think he is or isn't, he always executes what they ask him to do pretty well. And I just thought he did a great job with that.
I wrote it in my report at pwtorch.com. That might have been my favorite John Cena promo. I mean, he's done a lot. It was it was so different than some others that have been really good. And John's had a lot of clunkers, clunky promos and corny promos and groan-inducing parts of promos over the years. But this was so different, and it was so refreshingly so. It felt like we were listening. And again, it's Cena. You know, everything is orchestrated with him, and it's hard not to see it as such when you watch him. But I thought the presentation of him talking about, you know, well, and it was a little excuse-making, too, which isn't Cena's style. You know, well, mm-hmm. you know, Seth won, but that's in part because I do so much. That term, it's globally known. He's trying to balance so many things at once. I was like, wow, you know, you're just globally known, are you? I kind of chuckled at that. And he said that Seth can focus his attention on one thing, whereas he has to try to do everything at once, but he'll keep on trying. And I like how he's kind of walking away for the final line. He goes, I got 6 days to sort this out. I got to get to work. And he walks away. Mm. It felt like a sports promo. It felt like that exasperated coach after a loss talking to the media. And the more sports-like pro wrestling gets in those respects, the better, in that pro wrestling is emulating worked. It's a worked version, an emulation of real sports. And it's trying to tap into the emotions that make sports so successful, but do so in a dramatized, controlled, scripted, well, hopefully loosely scripted way most of the time. And this was Cena tapping into that tone as effective as I've ever seen him do. There's still some Cena-isms to it, a little melodramatic in certain ways. But yeah, I'm kind of nitpicking and qualifying a little bit. I don't mean to. I want to see more of that from him and from everyone else, and I do think one way or the other, this is laying the foundation for Cena versus Undertaker. You brought that up, Cam. Do you see something specific where this leads to that?
I just think it's that you remember your favorite Triple H promo, Wade, when he said that he and Undertaker were the last of the Outlaws, and I remember all the nice things that you said about that?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, no, I think it's something in line with that, but hopefully less damning to the guys coming up. You know, just that the Undertaker for so long, regardless of, and they might, I don't know if they'd actually say it, but, you know, do you talk about the Undertaker's body breaking down? Do you talk about his spirit breaking, but him battling through that to make sure that, you know, he still maintained, you know, who he was? Like, John Cena being on, you know, the other side of 40, on the downside of his career, does Undertaker take umbrage with the fact that John Cena is making excuses and give him that slap in the face to motivate him again? Like, I don't know if that's what you do with Undertaker, but
yeah.
Like, I could see that. Like, I'm my credibility is so high that I'm the only guy who can question your dedication and you actually feel the need to respond to it. Like, maybe it's just that gut check that they're trying to explain, which doesn't always work with guys kind of on a regular level, but maybe Undertaker being a legend and John Cena being a working legend, maybe that's the route you go. It's just you have to show more because you're supposed to be more. And it's the Undertaker trying to get that out of him. I feel like it's a lot to ask for a guy that you're not going to let talk a whole lot. But
yeah.
That's kind of what I see in the workings based on what Cena said the last 2 weeks.
I'm intrigued. I want to see what they come up with. And I'm hopeful and optimistic that it's going to be pretty cool how this plays out. And it'll be different. Cena's traveling into different territory. He's usually Superman who can balance it all with an upbeat attitude. And now he's doubting himself. He's a little mopey, a little discouraged, stretched thin. How does Undertaker enter that picture? And what are the stakes? And how do they make it seem like a big match that isn't coming around too late when both guys are past their prime? And that's what I hope we see. All right, email. Eric G., VIP member from Charlotte. Thank you, Eric. Says, I thought the Gauntlet match was produced really well tonight. It gave all the matches time to develop, and they did a good job to build the hype for Elimination Chamber, even though there was no real storyline reason to have this match. I especially enjoyed how they gave Seth Rollins a lot of momentum, trademark Michael Cole, going into the chamber and make him seem like a legitimate threat from a kayfabe standpoint. And I made that point earlier, so great minds think alike, Eric. Thank you. I was wondering if you guys think this is the start of something bigger for Seth, or it's just a mini push to add more intrigue to the chamber. I personally hope his momentum makes him a true crowd favorite for the chamber, and Balor can transfer Seth's sympathy into heat and turn heel during the match by eliminating him through nefarious means. That gives Seth a feud match for WrestleMania now that Jason Jordan is out, and Balor can go to SmackDown post-shakeup for a great feud with AJ as a heel. I had 2 hours to think about this during the Gauntlet match, and I want to hear your thoughts. So we talked earlier about Seth, and the first part of his question we kind of covered. Is this start of something bigger for Seth, or just add more intrigue to the chamber? I mean, I think it's both. I think it serves both purposes, but I think it is a... I don't think it can be seen as anything but a deliberate choice to give a boost to Seth in addition to boosting the chamber. But I like the idea of a heel Finn Balor against Seth Rollins too, and then a post shakeup move of Finn as a heel to go feud with AJ. I'm not sure what that angle would be with Balor and Seth. They didn't do anything with Anderson and Gallows here. So, Ken, your thoughts on that email?
I mean, it would be nice to see, and we talk about wanting to put Seth Rollins in a big match. If you get, you know, a face Seth and a heel Balor, then maybe you have a Braun and Miz match, and Braun is, you know, Intercontinental Champion going forward. I mean, that on a card that doesn't, at least at the moment, seem to have a lot of ardent fan matchups. Outside of Nakamura and Styles, there's one built in right there with Balor and Rollins. And it doesn't even, you know, have to be something that extends past WrestleMania, even if it's just for that one match. And then, you know, Balor or Rollins maybe goes to SmackDown and flourishes there. But, you know, I do tend to believe that you have Rollins come out and cut that promo. Because you expect more from Rollins and that you're going to give him that singles push, especially with, you know, Jordan being on the shelf for a while. So I don't think it's just for this match, even though I don't see him winning, but I do think that it's going to lead to more down the road. And I think that's a great pick for having a Balor-Rollins feud, because you know the quality of match you're going to get out of that, again, on a WrestleMania card that doesn't yet have those high-quality matches that you want to make sure you include.
Yeah, and I hope that they're considering that in their process of coming up with the lineup. I hope that's not just some happenstance that it maybe works out that way. I hope it deliberately does, or at least factors in. I want to read another email about Seth, and we can comment on also the early poll results for Raw here. I thought tonight's Monday Night Raw was really great, with the 7-man gauntlet match, the match of the night, with Seth having the best night of his career by wrestling for over an hour and pitting both Roman Reigns and John Cena in the same night. It's unheard of because of how hard these two men were pushed in their careers. Geez, this was a good show tonight. With that type of performance, does it lead to Seth having a big money match at Mania? So again, some territory recovered there, but Cam, is this the best match of Seth's career?
It absolutely is not. I could say that outright, even though this was really impressive.
Yes.
You know, CrossFit Jesus, all white Seth, SummerSlam with John Cena, I think still has to be the best night of his career. If we're talking about, you know, a one-on-one matchup, everything on the line, him being in the forefront, and just the things that he was able to do in that match one-on-one, that to me, that's still the best night of his career. Even though you could say this might be the best athletic showcase as far as a match, I still have to say Cena Rollins SummerSlam is that match. And even on top of that, not the WrestleMania match, but the triple threat match between Brock Lesnar, Seth Rollins, John Cena, where basically Seth created all the movement in that match, would still rank above tonight for me. But again, you know, reintroducing himself, showing something that you haven't seen from him in a long time, especially on a Monday Night Raw with that amount of eyes on him, this is really impressive. I still would rank this 3 out of those 3, though.
Yeah, I think that's a fair analysis. I think this is a very big night for Seth to do what he did, pinning the two top guys otherwise in the company in one show in a grueling match that was built up as much as it was. And part of telling a story of a match is not just what happens, it's how the announcers present it, how they frame it. And Cole and Graves and Coach made this seem like a even bigger deal in their commentary. Mm-hmm. I think I wasn't crazy about at the end of the whole show, the announcers talking about how much they liked what Absolution was doing to the other way. Oh, that's what I like about them. It's like, you know, coach saying that and everyone agreeing. Yep, yep, attacking people from behind 2-on-1. Woohoo, that's the way you get ahead in WWE. I'd like a dissenting voice in there, and I was disappointed that coach did not take that approach. That said, I think coach has been a huge improvement over Booker T. I thought coach was really good tonight. I thought he was good in this match. I think he brings that sports-like vibe to he brought a little WWE vibe at times to ESPN, but it more so he brings a sports vibe to WWE. And the debate about momentum versus wear and tear on the body, I thought was good. I thought Cole, with his statistics about match length, made it seem that what we were watching was important and would be part of history that would be remembered. I applaud the commentary and the aspirational nature of what they said and how they talked about this match being a big deal. They could have just sat back and said, wow, this is a really long match, and been kind of chuckling about it and low-key, and it's just guys just sitting around Mystery Science 3000 chit-chatting. But no, this was, we are excited to be here. We are so glad we got to call this, and this was a big deal. Cam, your take on the announcing and then also the a few weeks in now, the switch between Booker and Coach.
So I'm not allowed to say bad things about Booker T because of where I'm from. But no, Coach has definitely been, really good. Again, he has that kind of sports analysis that I think wrestling can lack sometimes with, you know, the Michael Cole stats and the Corey Graves, Mandy Rose fan club, even though he's really good. I do think that he's a really good balance to what they do and does. And some brevity and some gravity to the things that you're seeing. I agree with you that I don't really like how nobody really questioned what Absolution did because nothing happened in the context of a match. Like, this is all after a match was won. I'm not a real big fan of that. But, you know, ever since the UK tournament, I've really gained an appreciation for how good Michael Cole is. And now him kind of playing the other guy to Corey Graves, I think it's just really good for him. Coach is very good at what he does. The first week or two, I wasn't a real big fan of it. I think it was just him kind of getting back into shape, as it were.
Yeah.
But no, they do make a good team. I think they're really solid in what they do. And then tonight, just the time that Rollins was in the match, how, you know, Cole makes a big deal out of that. And even when they were wrong about him being in the longest match, because they said, you know, he's been 65 minutes, and then they immediately went to Bruno being 82 minutes.
Yeah.
That's sports. You can be wrong about a stat and come back and state what actually happened, and it doesn't make you look like you don't know what's going on. If anything, as wrestling fans, I think we tend to do this thing where when they say something that's not true, we immediately yell at the TV about what actually happened, because wrestling fans keep those stats on them. We all kind of do. But for him to immediately go, okay, Bruno went 82 minutes, it doesn't discredit what Seth does, but it puts him in good company with a name that you recognize. So hey, I thought that was good.
When you got to go back to like the Kennedy administration to find a match that went longer or whatever, you know, what year was that match? Did he identify it?
I could not see that. I don't remember.
I don't remember that. But, I mean, we got to go back that far. What you're doing is you're adding to the historical significance, even if it isn't the biggest or the longest match of all time. 64. So, I mean, yeah, that's
that was a while ago.
Well, that's a long time since a match has been that long. And certainly the longest match on Raw. Though, and I liked even the way Cole phrased it, where he goes, you know, that I understand that this was more than one match, but technically this was the longest, you know, non-stop match. You know, however he phrased it, it was like, mm-hmm. He wasn't trying to oversell what happened, but he wanted to put it, you know, frame it, that it was the longest single match maybe in WWE history at 107 minutes. So that's cool. Yeah. All right. Up next, Mike from Montreal. Question regarding the title picture at Mania. What are the chances Vince changes his mind and does Braun versus Brock for the title with Braun winning the title? Braun's popularity has just exploded in recent months, even more so with the Elias bit from last week. He has given a lot of TV time every week. I would think it would be a mistake not to take advantage of his popularity, and I'm worried that if WWE doesn't give Braun his chance soon, it will be too late. I'd love to know your guys' thoughts. Thanks for all your awesome podcasts all week. Quality stuff all the time. Thank you, Mike. Cam, we're going to get asked this until it is made officially otherwise. what do you think?
No. I mean, that's – I don't know how fast I can say no. I just see him as Andre the Giant, you know? I just – you don't put a title on him because then what do you do? Like, Vince McMahon, for whatever he is or isn't, he's not – WCW, in that they get the title on Goldberg and have to come up with this super contrived way to beat him that makes him look silly. I just don't think you do that with Braun Strowman. And I also don't think you have like a heel Roman Reigns set up or a super overrunning through everybody heel Elias. Like, I'm not a body guy. I think a small guy can beat up a big guy given the right circumstance, but I don't think the people in charge believe that. So I just don't think you put a title on Braun Strowman, because the booking that you have to do to get the title off of him just discredits him. Like, when you had Kane is kind of that right size to where a 6'2", 250 guy or like Stone Cold, or a 6'5", 270 guy like Rock can go in there and get physical with him and it'd be believable. When you have Big Show, who is huge, you still had a big, strong guy that you believed in that was super over like Rock, or you have a Brock Lesnar, who's a huge guy himself and, you know, was in his 20s back then, who can go physically blow for blow with Big Show and it'd be believable. I just don't think you have that guy in the pipeline to where you put the title on Braun and then you beat Braun and have it be believable and him still maintain his credibility. So, no, I think Braun is going to be no higher than an IC champion, but a special attraction from now until they find a crop of guys they feel like can go head up with him and it not hurt him if they beat him.
All right, we'll end on this note. I will, by the way, be covering Raw start to finish on the Wade Keller Hotline for VIP members, which I record right after this. Because we have to post-produce this before it goes up. The Wade Keller Hotline will be available to VIP members even before this show is made available to download. So if you're not a VIP member and you want to hear my thoughts on everything, including the topics we didn't get to here in the last hour and almost nearly an hour and a half now, please go VIP, pwtorch.com/go VIP. Two quick emails to end on. One, Vaughn from Canada just emailed in. I'll sneak this in. I have to say I really enjoyed this week's Raw much more than usual. The format was great. More wrestling and less talking. Good matches. And the time flew by. I'm hoping this is the direction they're headed in, and keep it this way, we can always hope. Cam, I got to ask you, what can we hope that they take from this show and apply going forward? Or is this, by the very nature of the timing and, you know, this seven-person elimination chamber match lead, you know, and how do we hype it? Well, we'll do a gauntlet match. It's such an anomaly. There's really not a lot they can take from it. Or is there something that they can take from this? Our early poll response so far is just under one third thumbs in the middle, just under two thirds thumbs up. I think one vote thumbs down so far. I mean, this is a very well received program. What can they take from what people are liking about this show and apply it to a more typical format?
Without being too long, thanks to you, and I may get to tell this story later, I may not. Travis and I had a really cool experience at the Black Panther premiere Thursday night. Black Panther has already made more money in its opening weekend domestically than Justice League. Justice League has a few of the most famous superheroes in the whole world. Black Panther has a superhero who is fairly obscure. The difference is this. If you can build up one character really, really strongly, you don't need a giant cast of characters that you just feel like you have to put on screen. I hope WWE learns that you can showcase a few guys or girls a week and it'd be more effective than you having to logjam everybody into a show because you feel like they have to get on. Tell a good story with fewer people each week, give us different people each week and make them interesting and focus on them, and you're going to produce a good show. This show was carried by, for the most part, for 2 hours by just six people. And it's one of the most effective at least in the short term, best reviewed Raws that they've had in so long, because, again, you focused on a few people. We don't need to see the whole roster every week. We need you to focus on a few guys at a time or a few women at a time and produce the best show you can with them so that the next time that they're on screen, we're a bit more invested in them. Just less people, more focus makes for a better show.
All right. Yeah, well put. What I hope they take from this, too, is just more sports-like promos. I love the interviews with guys after the match is over. Give them 2-3 minutes to catch their breath, because sometimes it's a little too soon after the match, and they can't speak because they're just so tired. But here they gave them a few minutes. I really like the inset interview, split screen. I know you don't – that's probably not something they're going to do much of, because there is a little bit of disrespect for what's going on in the ring if you arbitrarily decide to cut to an interview on a split screen in the back. But – more interviews with Renee Young in front of a backdrop talking about somebody, about the thrill of victory, and in this case, the agony of defeat. I loved that aspect of this. The interviews felt more authentic. Who would have predicted that Asuka would have the longest talking segment on any episode of Raw ever? And I think she did tonight. Yeah. Certainly she had the only in-ring talking segment. So I would say more of that. Just look at what worked about the presentation, about the statistics, the sense that a win was something worth fighting for, even if it would beat up your body 6 days before a pay-per-view. I like the commentary talking about things that fans naturally would be thinking about if wrestling were real. They gave viewers a story to believe in, to immerse themselves in. That can carry over. And less frivolity, less dumb comedy, less attempts at good comedy, because their attempts at good comedy usually ends up being dumb comedy. And just make us feel like we're watching a sport with a bunch of cool guys kicking each other's asses in really athletically thrilling ways. And then make sure you have people who, for the most part, can talk and have a character that we have an emotional reaction to, and let them go do their thing and lighten up on the scripting. By the way, I want to point out one pet peeve. I'm going to say this for the Keller Hotline, but Nia Jax yucking it up with Apollo Crews to hype up tomorrow night's Mixed Match Challenge. On the same show that 45 minutes later, give or take, they have her try to get heel heat by attacking Asuka from behind, essentially, is stupid. I mean, if you're going to do an angle to try to get a heel some heel heat, don't show them as this really kind of cool, likable person joking around with a baby face earlier in the show. Get your act together when it comes to that stuff. That's just so unnecessary. And it's one of the issues that I just have with the Mixed Match Challenge, where I'm just sort of half pretending it doesn't even exist because I'm so annoyed by it. But the presentation of it in this parallel universe. But just advertise the match, but don't show us Nia completely out of character joshing around with the baby face when you're going to do an angle with her trying to get heel heat later.
Yeah. Okay. I'm right there with you. Yeah. You don't have to show it on that show, especially when her and Apollo are playing just divergent characters right now. He's, you know, the underdog babyface that keeps getting won over on this all-powerful heel team. And, you know, she's sneak attacking the number one or number two female babyface on the show.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's – even though, like I said, it's like a different universe. If it's really a different universe, it shouldn't be on the same show.
I know. Yeah. Exactly. All right, and we're going to end on this note. Andrew G. with a question of the night. What are the odds Braun Strowman pulls the WrestleMania sign down and hits someone with it before WrestleMania?
Hi. it's got to be like empty arena so they can like manufacture it. But no, the thing is, nobody can survive that except him. So maybe the Miztourage comes out with a bulldozer and knocks it down on him, and then he Jasons his way through the sign.
Brilliant. Cam, thanks so much. Always a pleasure when you're on. Good conversation, a fun show to talk about tonight.
I appreciate it, Wade. Thanks.
You bet. So join me tomorrow post-SmackDown. We'll be on live taking calls right after SmackDown goes off the air within 5 or 10 minutes. And then you can download the entire show with our on-site correspondent, Brian Alston, and an email segment. So be sure to download that show. And if you missed last week's Blue Brand shows over at Podcast One, check out the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast flagship. And also, and that was with Bruce Mitchell, by the way. And then the Interview Friday, part 2 with Nick Aldis, part 3 coming up this Friday. Follow me on Twitter at TheWadeKeller. Follow our brand at PW Torch. Like me on Facebook at facebook.com/WadeKellerTorch. And like our brand at facebook.com/PW Torch. Cam, if you're there, do you have any social media you want to sneak in here before we wrap up?
Yeah, really quickly. Wade, thanks to you by a long, long story. Travis and I were able to attend the Black Panther premiere with the current writer of Rise of the Black Panther, Evan Narciss, through Hobson Heroes Comics and through Alamo Drafthouse. To see the video of that, even though we've been on a couple of different news outlets, just go to YouTube and South Congress. That's Congress with a K. And yeah, you can watch the highlights of Travis Bryan and myself at the Alamo Draft House's premiere of Black Panther with writer Evan Narciss from this past week. So yeah, you'll see us in costumes and taking pictures with people and doing news interviews. So yeah, YouTube.com and just search South Congress with a K to see all our highlights of the Black Panther premiere.
Do you give a thumbs up to Black Panther?
It's amazing. for some of us, it is the movie of a generation.
Yeah.
We've been talking about it for ages. It was just a great experience overall, and the movie was a cherry on top. It's great.
That's fantastic. Thanks, Gab. Thanks to all of our listeners. And until tomorrow night, Wade Keller thanking you and signing off.